This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening as we welcome our viewers in the West. As families of the 26 people killed in the Texas church shooting arrange memorials for their loved ones, the dark and troubling past of the gunman is coming into sharper focus, including previous death threats he reportedly made, his escape from a mental facility, and why he was once labeled a danger to himself. Tonight's solemn reflections from families of the dead, including a grandmother speaking about her stepson and memories of the young daughter he lost.
She was his princess. He was wrapped around her little finger. He said she kept coming up and putting little things in his pocket. And she said, "This is so you don't forget me, Daddy." And he said he wished he had known that was the last time he was going to see her.
We're going to hear more from families and survivors who came face to face with the killer in just a moment. But first, let's talk about the critical breakdowns and what authorities didn't know about Devin Kelly. Stephanie Gosk has late details.
Devin Kelly killed 26 people inside this small Texas church with a semi-automatic rifle that, by law, he should not have been allowed to buy. In 2012, just months after beating his first wife and stepson at New Mexico's Air Force Base Holloman, Kelly escaped a mental health facility, according to police records. An employee from Peak Behavioral Services, who followed Kelly to a bus station in El Paso, told police he was a danger to himself and others, as he had already been caught sneaking firearms onto Holloman Air Force Base. And he was attempting to carry out death threats against his superior officers. The health worker tells NBC News that the military examined the facility's computers and discovered Kelly was ordering weapons and tactical gear to a P.O. box in San Antonio. Kelly pleaded guilty to assault in a court-martial, leading to a year in detention and a discharge for bad conduct. The Air Force now says that conviction never made it into the FBI's National Criminal Database, something that would have prevented Kelly from buying firearms. Today, Defense Secretary James Mattis ordered an independent investigation after the Air Force announced its own review.
We are checking all of the Air Force databases, and there are several of them, to find out and confirm that all court-martial convictions for these kinds of offenses have been reported in the civilian database.
Kelly also ran into legal trouble in 2013, investigated by police after he was accused of rape. No charges were ever filed. Today, officials would not say whether his history was why the state denied Kelly a license to carry a concealed weapon.
How can someone be denied the right to conceal carry a weapon but still be able to purchase weapons in the state of Texas?
We have databases that we check, TCIC, NCIC. I can tell you what is required, and there was nothing in our databases that precluded him from purchasing a firearm.
Tonight, investigators in Quantico, Virginia, are working to unlock Kelly's cell phone.
They're in the process of looking at the phone. Unfortunately, at this point in time, we are unable to get into that phone.
This is a familiar problem for the FBI. In 2015, following that shooting in San Bernardino, Apple refused to work with the FBI to unlock the shooter's phone, citing customer privacy. Here, officials won't say whether Kelly was using an iPhone, but this is a key piece of evidence. And for the moment, Lester, they're stuck.
All right, Stephanie Goss tonight. Thank you. A prayer vigil is scheduled in the community this evening in memory of the victims killed in this massacre, and we are hearing from more survivors coming forward to describe the horror inside that church. Witnesses say the gunman showed no mercy, firing at point-blank range on children. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez has more on that.
5-year-old Rylan Ward, shot 5 times, is in critical condition tonight, fighting for his life.
To go in and just shoot children.
Sandra Ward is Rylan's grandmother. Her daughter-in-law, Joanne, died. So did her other grandchildren, Brooke and Emily.
What do you want the world to know about those kids?
Brooke was the sweetest thing. I keep thinking about it. She told me she wanted to be a ballerina. She wanted to take ballet. Emily, she was the sweetest little helper. She was always smiling, always happy.
20 were wounded in Sunday's massacre, including survivor Roseanne Solis, shot in the back. She says she could smell the gunpowder as the gunman yelled, "Everyone die."
I could see him. I was hiding under the benches, and I could see him, his feet, walking back and forth through the aisles. I didn't want to get shot.
Today, we learn more about the 26 who were killed. 16-year-old Haley Krueger loved babies, her mother says, and wanted to be a nurse. Air Force veteran Scott Marshall and his wife Karen had just moved here from the Pittsburgh area.
My only son, too. Go there to pray and get killed.
Robert and Shaney Corrigan were from Michigan, their hometown now remembering the high school sweethearts. David Brown's mother, Farida, is recovering at a hospital after being shot multiple times.
The lady she was next to, he started shooting her repeatedly. And so she held the lady's hand, and she was crying and looking at my mom the whole time. And she just told her, "You're going to be okay. You're going to go to heaven."
A community bound by faith, remembering those lost. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, Sutherland Springs, Texas.
We turn now to that stunning report of the Harvey Weinstein saga, detailing how the disgraced movie mogul allegedly used what's being described as an army of spies to infiltrate his accusers and journalists looking into those allegations for years. We get details from NBC News senior national correspondent Kate Snow.
It sounds more like a scene from a Hollywood thriller that Harvey Weinstein could have produced. The New Yorker publishing a bombshell report about Weinstein hiring private investigators, including former Israeli spies.
Harvey Weinstein, as allegations against him began to go public, hired essentially an army of private investigators. And these were not gumshoes in rundown apartments. These were elite international spying organizations.
Ronan Farrow writes a former Israeli Defense Forces officer posed as a women's rights advocate and convinced actress Rose McGowan to meet with her four times this year. "I took her to the Venice boardwalk and we had ice cream," McGowan tells Farrow. The hired agent pressing McGowan for information and recording tens of hours of conversation. Other investigators for Weinstein looked for dirt on reporters.
The intent of this campaign was to stop these allegations from becoming public, to make sure women stayed silent, and to make sure reporters didn't come out with the truth.
Last year, Weinstein reached out to the former Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Barak, who confirmed today he recommended one of the firms Weinstein hired.
These are obviously ballots.
Weinstein's lawyer, David Boies, famous for representing Al Gore during the 2000 recount and arguing for marriage equality, signed the contract. Today, Boies saying, "I regret having done this. It was a mistake to contract with and pay on behalf of a client investigators who we did not select and did not control." Weinstein's spokesperson told NBC it is a fiction to suggest that any individuals were targeted or suppressed at any time. Still, several of the accusers said Weinstein's actions made it harder to speak out. Italian actress Asia Argento tweeted about why she and other women didn't speak out sooner. "We were followed by ex-Mossad agents. Isn't that terrifying?" Very. Kate Snow, NBC News, New York.
President Trump wraps up his visit to South Korea tonight before moving on to China, the next stop on his sweeping Asia tour. After months of escalating rhetoric with North Korea, today the president struck a somewhat softer tone, urging that regime to come to the table and make a deal. But at the same time, the U.S. is engaged in a major show of force in the region. NBC's Richard Engel has a rare look at that force in just a moment. But first, NBC News chief White House correspondent Hallie Jackson is in Seoul, where the president is tonight. Hallie, good evening.
Good evening, Lester, or good morning from Seoul, where today President Trump tried to make a surprise visit to the demilitarized zone, but was turned back just 5 minutes out because of bad weather. The White House says the president is feeling disappointed and pretty frustrated, coming close to one of the world's most dangerous borders.
Donald Trump in the air, ready to stare down Kim Jong-un's rogue regime at the demilitarized zone. But low visibility forced his helicopter to turn back before the border barrier. It comes after hours earlier in Seoul, the president, who rarely pulls punches, did.
"Yes, I think we're making a lot of progress."
In South Korea, what President Trump's not saying is nearly important as what he is. Remember this recent rhetoric?
"With fire and fury, Rocket Man, totally destroy North Korea."
That talk toned down here, replaced by a willingness, apparently, to negotiate with Pyongyang. Call it art of the deal diplomacy.
"I really believe that it makes sense for North Korea to come to the table and to make a deal."
That comment comes some 6 weeks after President Trump tweeted his Secretary of State is wasting his time trying to talk with North Korea. Rex Tillerson in the front row overnight.
"We can all invite North Korea back to talks, but if they don't want to come, there's not a lot that we can do about that." It's North Korea's choice. I mean, they can choose to continue to pursue nuclear weapons, or they can realize that that path will only lead to a more insecure country.
Still, the president's flexing military muscle, pointing out the show of strength off the coast of the Korean Peninsula, three carriers and a submarine.
We have many things happening that we hope. In fact, I'll go a step further. We hope to God we never have to use.
The message, the U.S. ready but reluctant. Hallie Jackson, NBC News, Seoul.
That is a firm. Recommend VFR.
I'm Richard Engel. To see firsthand the front line of this long simmering conflict, we accompanied F-16 pilot Captain Kyle Moses on a training mission to the North Korean border.
Top four, clear for takeoff. Visor down. Here we go.
We shot up through the clouds vertically.
8,000.
The distance between South and North Korea is very short. At just shy of the speed of sound, we were there in minutes.
So this is about the north edge of the airspace. We're about 7 miles from the North Korean border right here.
So this is as far as you can go without provoking a war?
Yep.
Looking at the wingman behind him,
yep,
is North Korea?
Yep. Yep. Over those mountains there, you can see into North Korea there.
So is that where all their artillery is and all those rockets?
Oh, yeah.
Captain Moses, a.k.a. the Beast.
All right, get ready for some G here.
Put the jet through its paces, practicing combat maneuvers, how to attack North Korean targets and evade their fire.
This would be a dogfight.
Yep, exactly.
Air to air.
It was hard not to pass out. It's also hard to deny that the U.S. is increasingly ready for war, even if it says it doesn't want one. The highest concentration of naval power has come together here in years. In the Pacific, three aircraft carrier strike groups. Add to that about 32,000 U.S. troops in South Korea, reinforced missile defense systems, and more F-35 jets to the region. A show of force which speaks louder than words.
Dialing down the inflammatory rhetoric, but using a very cold and calculated set of signals is a good idea.
In case the show of force was lost on Kim Jong-un, those three aircraft carrier strike groups will be carrying out joint exercises for the first time together in this region in a decade. Lester?
Richard Engel, that dramatic account from near the border there. Thank you. Believe it or not, it's election night in America, including closely watched races for governor in Virginia and New Jersey. In the Garden State, voters are going to the polls to make their choice to replace outgoing Governor Chris Christie. But most eyes tonight are on Virginia, where polls have been tight. Democrats hoping to score another win in the Old Dominion. Republicans hoping to score an upset. Both parties looking for momentum heading into 2018. Still ahead, the startling new warning about the link between alcohol use and cancer. The alert you need to hear, even if you barely drink. Also caught on camera, the security breach at a major American airport. The shocking way an intruder made it onto the tarmac. We'll be back. We're back now with surprising health news about alcohol and cancer. A new report from some of the nation's top cancer doctors finds a link between even light and moderate drinking and an increased risk for many common forms of the disease. Let's get details now from NBC News medical correspondent Dr. John Torres.
New estimates show drinking alcohol causes nearly 4% of all cancer deaths in the U.S., and the amount you drink matters. Moderate drinking is considered one drink per day for women and two drinks for men. Heavy drinking, three drinks for women and four for men. And no matter what your favorite beverage is, the risk increases. For colon cancer, a moderate drinker increases their risk by 17%, and a heavy drinker's climbs to 44%. For breast cancer, a light drinker bumps up her risk by 4% and a heavy drinker by 61%. When it comes to head and neck cancer, a heavy drinker has a staggering increased risk of 500%. So what's the healthiest amount to consume? None. For cancer prevention, it's best not to drink alcohol. What about the heart-healthy benefits of a glass of red wine? In fact, the scientific jury is actually still out on that.
If you don't drink, there's no reason to start. If you do drink, there's no reason to increase. And if you want to cut back, that's always better.
So, John, does this advice cut across the board apply to everyone?
And, Lester, family history plays a big role in this. If you have a family history of cancer or an increased risk of cancer yourself, then you need to be even more careful with alcohol. But for all of us,
moderation is certainly the key.
It's surprising what's considered moderate versus light.
It is surprising. I think most people will be surprised.
Dr. John, thanks very much. Coming up, the hidden secret, finally discovered in a masterpiece by one of the greatest artists of all time. Welcome back. The wildest video of the day comes to us from Miami. Take a look. It's a scary security breach. A man pretending to talk on his cell phone at the airport when suddenly he dives onto the baggage carousel, ending up all the way onto the tarmac. Another video shows him brought down before he's handcuffed by police. Still unclear why he jumped onto that conveyor belt. People have been staring at it for over a century, but only now are they noticing perhaps the most unusual thing ever found in a Van Gogh. A researcher using a microscope looking at Van Gogh's olive trees found an actual grasshopper embedded in the paint. As for how it got there, Van Gogh was known to paint outdoors, and the grasshopper made its way on there and is now a part of history. If you're active on Twitter and you're sick of running out of room to say what you want, there's good news. After Twitter experimented with doubling its character limit for some accounts, the company has decided to do it for all users from 140 to 280 characters. Twitter began rolling out the change today. When we come back, compassion in the court. The judge whose sweet brand of justice has made him an unlikely viral sensation. Finally, tonight, the verdict is in. The judge who presides over one American courtroom is an honest-to-goodness viral hit with tens of millions thanks to his kind approach to laying down the law. NBC's Kristen Dahlgren explains.
All right.
In Judge Frank Caprio's courtroom, people seek absolution for their traffic sins.
Are you ready to confess?
I am. I feel like this is confession.
A court where common sense rules, like when you park just 1 minute before it's legal.
9:59 is close enough to 10. Matter's dismissed.
Thank you.
I don't wear a badge under my robe. I'm not a police officer. I wear a hat under my robe. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
His courtroom videos now viral, showing his compassion for the broke and brokenhearted, like this woman struggling after the death of her son.
I'll leave you with $5.
I'm not going to leave you with $5. I'm going to dismiss everything.
A city official once came to Caprio, worried about lost ticket revenue.
My response was, I'm not a revenue enhancement officer, I'm a judge.
Caprio has a soft spot for defendants' kids.
What did you have for breakfast this morning?
I didn't have anything.
So I'll charge a zero if she buys you breakfast.
They sometimes help with tough decisions.
I can charge him $30, or I can charge him nothing. What do you think I should do?
30.
There is just one rule.
But I don't like when people lie to me.
I want to hear what their problem really is.
Tell the truth and you'll get a break, maybe a hug, and at the very least, a reason to smile. Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, Providence, Rhode Island.
Justice with a heart. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Tuesday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.